Wait. This meeting is being audio recorded. Okay, go ahead and start, Trish. Welcome to the March 1st, 2023 public meeting of the Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board. We are happy that so many of you could join us. And we are going to start with community input. Is there anybody that has some input for the good of the order? And I see Darla has her hand up.
Always. I just wanted to let everyone know that we have gotten our Dan Thompson grant and that we are moving forward, PEACE is moving forward with the housing program that we received the grant from, that we have free roommate residential assessments available for families, and we have lots of trainings going on. We're going to be doing some round circle helping families who have adult children build their circles of support and do futures planning. Any of you that know me know I'm like the Green Reaper. I'm always waiting and preparing for death. And so, but really helping families figure out how do we prepare for when we're not here so that our kids are set up good. And so we're going to have some facilitated discussion. We're excited to be bringing on some new employees to be managing that grant. And it's just a very exciting time that this has finally come to fruition.
Thank you, Darla. Can you remind us all again, specifically the Dan Thompson grant is earmarked for support or assessment to match up?
Dan Thompson grants could be for lots of different things. The one we applied for, the one PEACE applied for, was to create a housing navigation program that can be replicated across the state and to create an educational format for that to happen. And then funding to purchase a home to start some shared living model. And then Partners for Housing actually received a Dan Thompson grant to provide the free roommate assessment. And we're partnering with them around that roommate assessment piece. Just trying to come out the housing issue for adults with who experience IDD from a multitude of angles. So it really is, the Dan Thompson grants that have been focused across the state have been amazing, and a large chunk of them really were focused on housing issues because it is such an area that needed attention.
Mm-hmm. And so the housing that you're, that the grant will be seeking to purchase, will that, how many occupants will that have, and then will it have a place for some sort of a provider as well?
That's what we're hoping for. We haven't got that far yet, so stay tuned. You know, we really, you wouldn't want more than probably four individuals and maybe a live-in residential, I can't think of what they call them. It's an RA, but I can't remember what the A stands for. So, we'll see. I mean, a lot of it's going to depend upon what the housing market does because the market has changed so drastically since we submitted the grant. So, but we're excited to be in this stage of it.
Awesome. Congratulations. Does anybody else have any questions for Darla? I know this is probably new information for some of our new folks that are our next agenda item. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands up, but that doesn't mean there's not any. All right, so moving on, I am excited to announce four new members of our Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board. And so I'll do a quick introduction and then let you introduce yourself. And it looks like we're going in alphabetical order by last name. And so I understand that Amy Campbell, you are present in the room. And so Amy comes to us from the Campbell School District, and if memory is serving me right, Amy joined the district in 2007, and the only reason I would know that is because that's the same year that I joined the district. And so Amy, take it away.
Thank you so much, Suzanne. Yes, so I am a special education teacher in the Kansas School District, and I've been doing that for 15 years. I've been working directly with and collaborating with families around services and have really developed a passion for helping students and youth and families develop their own advocacy, and I've sort of developed mine as that process has happened. I have a real interest in inclusionary practice, and that work has brought me to developing my own skills in inclusion. I also work with the Washington Education Association on their inclusionary practice cadre as a professional development facilitator to work with other educators across the state at and a variety of stakeholders to develop their skills for supporting students who receive special services. I'm on some other nonprofit boards, and I'm interested in facilitating all kinds of collaboration around supporting individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, including in our communities. So this just feels like an extension of being able to inform myself and advocate around the needs that I see the families who I serve, and hopefully create opportunities and spaces for them to be better connected with the services we have and advocate for themselves in these sorts of spaces. So, yeah, do you have any questions?
What grade level or age level students do you work with?
Well, I directly serve 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders, but once you're Mrs. Campbell's student, you are always Mrs. Campbell's student.
Any other questions for Amy? Next, Darla, you got the emojis flying all over the place there. They didn't navigate the system. All right, thank you so much, Amy, and welcome. Just to add to what Amy said, that she has been a regular participant in our board meetings as a community member, so she's somewhat familiar. And it's just a little brag about Amy. It was unfortunately, it was the 2019-2020 school year when the pandemic shut down our school systems and our opportunities to intermingle with one another. But she was the Washington State Educator of the Year. Was that the title they gave you, Amy? I mean, the whole state.
I was the 2020 Washington State Teacher of the Year, and it was very exciting for a special education teacher to get to go and represent all other teachers at the White House. It felt like a celebration of everything we do. So, yes, thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, that was a brag about Amy, but I didn't know if you were going to share it or not, because it's a really important part of who she is and what she does and the recognition that she's received for what she does. So, thank you. Okay, our next new board member is Gabriella Ewing. And so, Gabriella, you come with a very interesting and diverse background. I had the pleasure of meeting you in our interview. And so, I will let you please introduce yourself.
Hi, Susan, and everybody. Thank you for having me, and I'm excited for this appointment to serve for Clark County. My name is Gabriela Ewing. My pronouns are she, her, ella. My first language is Spanish, second English, third, still in debate, which one will be the third. I'm practicing some other languages, but I don't know which one will be the third one, the final. So, I am a mother of two young men. I want to say always children, but there are no little kids anymore. And one is 21 and the other one is 19. My youngest was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder when he was about 2 years and 8 months. And that took me into this path that I'm on right now. Besides being a mom and a wife, I do a lot of things for the community. I'm the executive director of a small nonprofit, Hispanic Disability Support of Southwest Washington, Patito Gigantes, which is the largest Hispanic organization for families with intellectual and developmental disabilities, not only in the Southwest Washington, but in the state, because there are other multicultural organizations, but they don't have a large outreach with Hispanic families. So, and I also serve for the state of Washington at the Developmental Disability Council. I was appointed in 2019, and I'm serving right now as the co-chair. And I will continue serving after my appointment as the co-chair is done. I was requested to stay on to provide some support. And I support Clark County at different levels with health equity and inclusion. And yeah, I don't know how many hats. So I can't remember right now. But yeah, it is a pleasure to serve my community and just to ensure that they will be included in the conversations, because it's a very marginalized community with so many things on the way, starting with language and immigration status and just everything in front of, like, everything you could think that you are in disadvantage, just add more to it. So that's what we face with his families. And it's a pleasure to be here, an honor to serve my community. And I hope I can do a good job. And I want to congratulate Amy for being the excellent teacher. And Tati, I don't know any of you, or Sydney, congratulations for being here and appointment. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Any questions for Gabriella? I'm not seeing any hands up. I feel blessed that we can have you as part of our board. Gabriella, thank you so much for your commitment. As you all heard, Gabriella does a lot for our community. Hopefully takes time to do stuff for herself, but we are quite fortunate to have you as a member of our board, and I hope that we live up to the expectations that you have of us as well. So, awesome. All right. So our next introduction is Tavi. Tavi Monging has joined our advisory board, lending her expertise that I will let her share with you. Tavi.
Hey, everyone. My name is Tavi Monging. I'm very excited to be a part of this advisory board. I've worked with Trish. I know Trish and Kristen for quite some time. We worked together in partnership with DVR, Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. I've been with DVR for about 15 years now. I started out as a counselor assistant, and after I got my master's, I was able to move forward to different levels of vocational rehab counselor. I'm currently the lead for voc rehab. And I have a very strong passion working with people with disabilities. I have a strong passion for diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. I'm currently also a fellow with the Community Leadership Institute, where they focus on advancing, you know, racial equity, health equity, affordable housing, learning about all those. It's amazing. That leadership fellowship program is amazing, and I'm learning a lot. So I'm really excited to be a member of this advisory board, and I'm happy to help in any way possible. And I'm open to learning new things and just, you know, working with everyone in a new capacity. I've been working with Trish and Kristen with DVR, but I'm really excited to just work together in a different capacity. So, all I have to say. And thank you so much for including me.
Thank you, Tabby, for joining us. Questions anyone has for Tabby? Thank you so much. Another blessing from our community to the Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board. And our last new member, for the time being, Sydney Morgan. We are so fortunate to have you joining our board as well, and I will let you go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thank you, Susan. Hi, everybody. Really great to be here and to get the opportunity to be on the board. Being in this space for me is really personal. I have three kiddos who are all neurodiverse, and so it's for me very important to continue to support and advocate for families who are marginalized in a lot of ways, like Gabriella said. And just we need all hands on deck, so to speak, in that. So really excited to be here based on that, but also really with a learning space for me, learning how to be on boards too is a new space for me, and so I'm excited to do that. And so my work background is in DEI work, but also with restorative justice work. I've been a practitioner of RJ for about 21 years and do a lot of conflict work and training. And so for me, it's just a really exciting opportunity to just be able to offer my skill wherever and support in that. And also worked in institutional space, and so understand sort of like the ins and outs of that, and sort of what families experience in different places and spaces where they're marginalized and not heard. So I'm excited to be here. There actually are some familiar faces and names on this list. That is really exciting for me as well. So looking forward to being a part of this group and learning from you all. And thank you so much for this opportunity.
All right. Did anybody have any questions for Sydney? All right. I just am amazed at the breadth and depth of talent that we have been able to recruit to have members of our advisory board. And you talked about, mentioned all hands on deck. We have some amazing hands that we are bringing on deck to be a part of our board. And so I know you both agreed to at least a 3-year commitment. And so this is going to be a pretty amazing 3 years and hopefully many years to go on after that. And so welcome, everyone. I feel old and tired just listening to y'all talk about what you do. Okay. So without further ado, we will move on with our next agenda item, Clark County Comprehensive Plan. So Jackie Camp, I see, you must be here somewhere.
I'm here.
Yes, okay. Hi, Jackie. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Okay, so if you would like to share what you have for us, we will be ready.
Wonderful. Well, again, my name is Jackie Camp, and I'm joined by my coworker, Jenna Kay. And Jenna's going to be doing the majority of the presenting tonight. I'm here to also to answer any questions as well. But Jenna and I both work in community planning, which is the county's long-range planning department. And tonight, and you might have heard some of the things that we're doing. We noticed that Martha Mayer was presented to you all in January. Jenna and I staffed that housing option study and action plan advisory group. So we were the two of the staff that worked with getting that group together and helping and getting them to help us on how we put together that plan. As well as maybe you already met Jenna, who's with the Commission on Aging and staff the Commission on Aging, and I did that as well for many years. So we are glad to be here today. Thank you for taking time to talk with us, and I'll let Jenna take it away and we'll go from here.
All right. Well, like Jackie said, thank you for having us. We wanted to give a brief presentation to tell you a bit about Clark County's comprehensive plan update that's due in 2025, and share a bit about what the project is, the timeline, talk a bit about the public participation plan for the project, and then want to make sure we have some time for discussion because we're really interested in seeking out possible intersections of what you all do with what this project is, to try and figure out where there might be some good connection points. And then we'd like to wrap up with next steps. So first, some project background. So first, what is a comprehensive plan? So comprehensive plans are long-range policy guides to manage growth and development over a 20-year planning period. The county and the cities in the county are required by state law to periodically review their comprehensive plans and implementing development regulations in their entirety, and if needed, to revise them. So that's what this project is our periodic update of the county's comprehensive plan. The State Growth Management Act requires that comprehensive plans contain certain elements, such as those listed here. So it covers a lot of things, from land use and housing, to capital facilities, utilities, and rural areas. It touches on transportation, economic development, parks and recreation, shorelines, and annexation. Excuse me. And then jurisdictions can also have additional optional elements. So the county's current comprehensive plan also includes chapters on schools, historic preservation, and community design. So the county's comprehensive plan is a really big document. It's a couple hundred pages long. So we want to try to, you know, do a few examples of what you can find in it. So first of all, there's a lot of background information on all of those topics I just listed. But in addition to background information, there are a ton of policies and many maps in this big document. So for the policies that live in this document, some are countywide and apply to all of the cities and the county, and then some are county specific. Each city within Clark County also has its own comprehensive plan that has city specific policies in it. So on this slide, we take just one example of a policy that lives in the housing chapter of this plan. So I'll just read it. The comprehensive plan of the county and each municipality shall identify sufficient land for housing, including but not limited to government-assisted housing, housing for low-income families, manufactured housing, multifamily housing, and group homes and foster care facilities. All jurisdictions will cooperate to plan for a fair share of the region's affordable housing needs and housing for special needs populations. So, like I said, this is one example of hundreds of policies that live in this plan. But what is a policy like this? What impact does it have? So, in this example, what this policy does is it means that the county and the city's regulations that relate to housing have to be written to be consistent with this policy. So these policies are really serving as a guide for local government lawmaking as it relates to growth and development. I also mentioned there are a lot of maps in the plan, and perhaps the most significant are the maps shown on the screen, and these are the county's land use and zoning maps. So this means for every piece of land within the county, they have a land use and zoning designation. And, you know, this determines whether a property is considered urban or rural. And a specific zoning designation determines what you are and are not allowed to build on a piece of property.
So for instance, if you're really interested in a certain type of housing that you'd like to see more of in our community, the zoning of a property is really important on whether or not that type of housing can be built there or not. Okay, so that's just an introductory glimpse into what our comprehensive plan is and some of the things you can find in it. And as you can tell, it's a really broad document that covers a lot of things. So I'm going to shift and talk a little bit more about the process of how we review and update this type of document. So to organize the process for this project, community planning has divided essential elements of the project into four phases. Each phase has specific tasks and activities that are planned to engage community members and key stakeholders in identifying issues, developing policy concepts, and sharing the final recommended plan that will be considered by the county council. So we don't want to overwhelm you with too many details of all the steps involved in this project, but we want to share enough information so that we can start to have a conversation with you all to see, like I mentioned earlier, see if there's any like connection points with what you all are working on. So I'll just walk through each phase and highlight some examples of things that will be happening in each phase to help us with that conversation. So for the next several months in phase one, so for much of this year, we're going to be working on the preliminary steps that are getting this project going. So we're developing a public participation plan, and then the county council is going to be making some decisions like the amount of people we are planning for and the amount of jobs we need to plan for in the county. And then based on those numbers, those are going to get divvied up between the cities and the county on who's responsible for planning for X number of people and Y number of jobs. In phase two, this is really when community feedback can start to be really helpful, because it's when we're going to be working on developing future growth alternatives to, that we'll then be evaluating with an environmental impact assessment and things like that. So we're also going to be collecting feedback in phase two on the comprehensive plan text, the policies in it, and the developing code regulations that implement those policies. So we're going to be looking for feedback on things that need to be updated related to those. So, for instance, that might be an interesting opportunity for us to come back to you, give you all an update on the project, and if of interest, you know, that could be an opportunity where you might want to review certain aspects of this plan to see if you have any policy suggestions for the county. So again, this is just one example if that were of interest to you. The third phase is really when there's going to be further review and refinement of the work that started in phase two. So this might be another opportunity. We could come back and talk to you, give you an update, and if you wanted to provide, you know, do additional review of any aspects of the plan or provide additional suggestions to us, that's a potential opportunity as well. And then phase four of this project is when all of the work that's been done goes through the final review and adoption process, ending with the county council adopting the plan. And this is really the last phase, is if you want to show up to council or planning commission hearings and think about an aspect of the plan you're really passionate about, you know, this is the time to do that in the home stretch. Okay, I know that's a lot. I've got one more sort of chunk of background information and then I'm going to stop talking. We just wanted to also mention the public participation plan for this project and a little bit about what that is. So in addition to the overall project timeline, we have this public participation plan that outlines the opportunities for members of the public to participate early and continuously throughout the project. And right now, Jackie and I and some other staff, we're working on a final draft of this plan, and it's going to go to the county council for a hearing on March 21st. So we're mentioning this now because if you happen to have any interest in looking at this document or sharing feedback on how we could do our public engagement better for this project, a final draft of this document is going to be available next week, and that's what the hearing is going to be on, and you are welcome to submit comments to council as they consider it and make any final revisions. So a little bit about what's in this public participation plan. It outlines four goals for this project, which include accessible participation, inclusive participation, meaningful participation, transparency, and accountability. This public participation plan also includes a preliminary list of the many stakeholder groups that staff will be reaching out to during the project. This time around, we're really trying to reach out to groups who have historically been left out of public planning processes. So this includes people such as renters, people living with disabilities, immigrants and refugees, as well as BIPOC-led organizations. So we're just starting reaching out to groups such as those to see if there's any interest in participating and trying to find out ways that make sense to best engage. Staff working on this project are also going to use a wide range of outreach and engagement tools along the way that are tailored to the needs and opportunities during each phase of the update. And so this public participation plan provides some more detail on what we mean by each of these tools and how they might be used as part of the project. So as I mentioned, if you have any suggestions of how the county can do its work better and do a better job engaging with various people in the county or particular interest groups, please share your feedback, and we would love to review it and have council weigh in on how we might incorporate that. Okay, so I know that was a lot, so I'm going to pause, and we'd like to have a little bit of discussion if you're up for it, and then after the discussion, we have one more slide with just some next steps. But I guess something we're curious about from you all is, first of all, if you have any questions about anything I just presented on, please ask. Jackie and I are happy to answer questions or provide more information about certain aspects of this project. So that's one question for you all to think about. The second is, we're curious to hear a bit about what you all are focused on to help us better understand how your work may intersect with this enormous project. And then thirdly, based on anything that we said, did we say anything that staff is like a possible opportunity to connect with you all? Curious if anything stood up to you. So we'll throw out those three questions, and glad to hear any comments or questions that you have.
Thank you. I think Gabriella has her hand up.
Yes, hi, thank you. Thank you so much for presenting, and I know that I'm leaving in a few minutes. I'm sorry, I had a previous compromise. But my question is about, I hear from a representative in Olympia that there is a plan of merging the city of Vancouver absorbing unincorporated areas. And what's the plan if that's the case? And I would like to know more about it because that will affect or benefit and both the community. We have a lot of issues with medical providers that rather have people go all the way to Longview to receive services because they have a better pay in Longview due to the zoning that they are rural, I mean urban instead of rural, and we're still rural in this in Clark County. But also, how will that, if that happens, how will that complicate things for us? You know what I'm saying? And I will just leave it up to that. Thank you.
Okay,
And I'm sure we'll have more conversations about it. Thank you.
Yeah. Jackie, do you want to talk a little bit about sort of annexation type? That topic and how that works?
Sure. I'll do my best. It can be complicated because there's differences between, and you probably can see, with the map that Clark County has with the Vancouver and the other smaller cities. So historically or traditionally, you know, we have these urban growth areas that have been designated to control growth, and the first one was in 94 when the decision makers for the county and the cities developed these boundaries for urban growth areas around the city. And that was to determine this is where urban growth is going to go. And for it to develop, the cities have to eventually annex that land into the city limits for each city for that land to fully develop under in urban services. And so it has the roads and it's got all the infrastructure, utilities, sewer that's needed. The Vancouver urban growth area is quite unique as it historically has not annexed big portions of the urban area into the city of Vancouver. So the county has a very large urban jurisdiction that is unique to a county government that's not part of the city of Vancouver. Since I've been here, so I started in 07, beginning of 07, there has been a few small annexations by the city of the urban growth unincorporated area, but traditionally what I understand is that it has a for like the areas of Hazeldale and Salmon Creek, that there hasn't been the interest of the communities to incorporate into the city. So there is a process in place that has to be done to annex areas into the city of Vancouver. And it's a coordination that happens between the county and the city. So we're not aware. I think there was at one point a kind of a blueprint of, you know, kind of how things were going to get annexed and when. And I believe that the city and county have been talking about updating that in previous years. So it may be something that comes, that more is talked about during this update when we do a lot of coordination and planning with the city of Vancouver. And I don't know if that answers your question because it's complicated, but that's pretty much what my understanding and at least what we know of now related to annexation. But we can find out more and, of course, share back with this group if there's any specific plans in place that can provide more information about timing and locations.
Thank you. I'm sure we'll keep talking about it.
Definitely.
Yeah. And so does anybody else have any questions?
I just want to say bye to everybody. I'm sorry. I had a previous compromise, but I'll be here.
Thank you, Gabrielle.
Thank you
for your question.
Thank you.
And so I'm not seeing any other hands up. So if you're speaking, and Scarlett, to add to my... So we just met with our legislators, and typically we take three priorities to them. And so the focus, one of the focuses this yearly that we continue to work on is employment. And so finding jobs, retaining jobs, and at this point it's also finding staff that can help them secure the jobs and help them get trained, you know, job coaches and support systems. Because everybody's short on staff for everything. And we have this wealth of people who are willing and able to work. They just need a little help in getting that job and getting that path laid out. And so we've got resources, we just need added resources. One of our other priorities is housing. And so I thought it was timely, I think you did that on purpose, that you picked that particular part of your plan to share. But if you were here at the beginning too, you heard Darla talk about the grant that she got. And so housing is a huge need and a high priority. And then also just looking at our aging population, we have a lot of aging people with IDD who are living with their parents that are aging even more faster than they are. And at some point, they're not going to be able to care for the individual that they're caring for and themselves, one or the other. Something's got to change. It's still serving our aging population as well. Darla, Trish, is there stuff you want to add to my really snapshot?
Susan, I think that was great. Thank you for going over the legislative priorities. I did also want to bring your attention, Jackie and Jenna, to the comprehensive plan. So the role of the Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board is to advise the county counselors on issues related to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families, and also to advise staff on effectiveness and efficiency of programs. And a big chunk of work that the advisory board does is to advise on the development of the 5-year comprehensive plan for developmental disabilities. So we have our own comprehensive plan, quite different in scope of what you're talking about. But those priorities that the board has identified in the comprehensive plan, include employment, equity, community information and advocacy, transitioning high school students, transportation, housing, recreation and leisure, early intervention, aging issues, and healthcare. These are all important issues to the advisory board. I think that the board acknowledges the would you say the frenzied pace of the legislature during session? And so they really try to narrow in on the three highest and most immediate priorities. So that's what Susan covered. But these are all issues, and there's more information in our comprehensive plan that describes what each of those priorities mean. Jackie, Jenna, I'd be happy to send you a link to that. It's posted on our website.
Thank you. That's really helpful. I'm just hearing a lot of overlapping topics as you're listing all of these things. So yeah, that would be great.
I think that, one really important thing to remember about people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families is that they've got a lot of the same needs as everybody else. So while there may be things that are unique and accommodations that might be needed to help people to fully support to fully engage and participate and contribute in their communities, a lot of the needs are the same as everybody else.
Yeah. And Darla, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of tag on to what both of you said. Over 80% of the individuals who experience IDD are living at home with mom and dad at any age. That means we have 90-year-old parents supporting 70-year-old children. One of the main reasons that is because of the lack of affordable housing. And so that is a huge issue, and the issue around being able to do auxiliary dwelling units in all locations is a huge issue. And when we talk affordable housing, what's typically billed as affordable housing, 30% of AMI, is way too much for our population. Our population generally lives on about $12,000 a year. So they are in I can't remember the federal term, but there's a term that federally talks about those that are really living significantly below poverty level, and that's these adults who experience IDD. And so really when we look at that housing issue, the aging and the housing issue really overlap, and the land use issue here in Clark County is a big part of that. And how do we address that, and what does that look like? We can give people services, but we cannot afford to get them affordable housing is the crunch. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and with so many of our individuals too, like housing and transportation need to literally be side by side because a lot of them don't drive, so they rely on mass transit to get from, you know, a job to home or to a medical appointment or something, and so that's also critical.
Absolutely, and we will share. It sounds like we've got a definite nexus here with housing. And transportation, for sure, have huge elements of the comprehensive plan. There's been new state legislation that was passed a couple of years ago requiring counties that plan under the Growth Management Act to plan for and accommodate for housing at all income levels. And they're actually letting us know, you know, how many units that we per income band. And we're going to have to figure out where that's going to go and how we do that. So, Jenna, I can definitely see us checking in, with this group kind of on that work that we'll be doing, here with those housing, new housing requirements and what the county and all the cities will have to do to plan for and accommodate for, housing at all income levels.
One of the other issues that would be really nice, I mean, if we're just wishing, let's wish, right, is walkable communities so that people can walk to grocery stores and walk to the things that they need. Yes, transportation is critical, but it would be nice if we didn't have to have transportation for every single thing if we had more walkable communities.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, that, I think, was a productive conversation. We have one more slide.
This is our last slide, so we'll make sure Trish gets these, so you all can have a copy of them. But like we mentioned, if you want to weigh in on the public participation plan for this project, there's an upcoming hearing, and there's a link here on how you can participate if you wanted to. We're adding Trish to our project email list, so she'll get, you know, any updates on this project and can forward along anything that makes sense, you know, to forward on to you all as a group. If hearing about this project got you very excited about it and you'd like to individually get all the updates about it, you're welcome to sign up for that, but we also don't want to fill your email inboxes with more details than you care for. And then, you know, it's sounding like maybe we can work with Trish to sort of coordinate on timing of when we can come to you to get feedback, you know, or if there's a section of something we're working on that you might want to review and say, hey, you're missing X, Y, Z, you know, perspective, or you're not really taking care of our population that we're concerned about. It would be great to get you all to help us make this plan better than it would otherwise be. So,
and members of our board, so Darla would be a great example, have, you know, the vast connection to our actual community members who are the ones that we're talking about here. And so to even offer an opportunity to get input from them directly.
Great, wonderful.
That would be great.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for letting us come talk to you.
We do have one more question. Oh, okay. Is that, should I go?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. So, when you talked about there's new legislation that was passed that mm-hmm. talks about what, the different kind of bands of affordable housing that you would need to mm-hmm. put in. Is that what is meant by fair share in the example that you presented? I just had that was my question about what does that mean, fair share? Thanks.
Yeah, Jack, you want me to start on that?
Sure.
I think the fair share piece, my understanding is that is more about who's taking care of all those needs. So, you know, is City of Vancouver providing all of the specialized housing in the county, or are Battleground, Cabot, and the unincorporated areas also taking up a piece of the pie? So it's more about the distribution among the local governments on meeting the needs of the people who live here.
Yeah, and it will. It is similar to this new legislation, right? So the council will need to choose this population number, right, that we're going to be planning for, the 20-year, forecast, and then that the state is helping counties and local governments figure out how many housing units you're going to need to plan for between, 0 and 50% of the area median income household, 50 to 80, 80 to 120, et cetera. So that, and then the counties and the cities, that's where they coordinate on depending, how much of that population is going to go to the city of Camas, how much of that population is going to go to Vancouver, Washougal, LeCentre, the unincorporated county. So those are all decisions and discussions that occur as we move forward with planning for this update.
Thank you. I do have just one more question. And then I also just wanted to see if there was any questions here in the room as well. But my question is about, as you're going through this comprehensive plan and planning for things like housing or transportation or other things, are you looking at data disaggregated by race and ethnicity to look at the needs in the community?
Kevin, I didn't know if you were about to say something.
I was going to say, in the current plan, there's a little bit of race-related, data, but mm-hmm. demographic, but not a ton. Mm-hmm. There's definitely an opportunity to do a lot more specific breakdown of a lot of the data that's in there. Jackie, I don't know if you have anything else to add to that.
My thought process goes to, we showed in one of those slides all the elements of the comprehensive plan, and one of the main elements is the housing chapter. And I believe that does have a lot of demographic information in there. So we would definitely love any input on additional data and info that would be helpful and that we could look at and include as we do this update.
Thank you.
Yeah.
One more question.
All right.
There is a question here in the room. Go ahead, Amy. Sorry, Susan, is that okay?
Oh, yeah, you're fine.
Thank you so much. My question is actually just as I've been listening and ruminating, you said that one of the factors that the Clark County Plan considers is schools, and I wonder, how are you connecting with schools and local school districts? Because the zoning would have larger implications around boundaries and boundary designing and transportation needs within school districts, which would impact the lived experiences of our younger community members and families overall. So,
So there is a schools chapter. It's largely been written by the school districts themselves. So we work at a few different levels, but we're largely working with facilities planning staff and like superintendent level staff on sort of some of the key policies that are in that chapter. So we're definitely well connected in terms of the building of schools and the needs for each school district and the school district has a facility plan that's up feeding into the comprehensive plan. So that side of things is fairly well coordinated. I think we as staff are really interested in trying to reflect school and family interests beyond that, right? Beyond the buildings themselves. So if you have any suggestions on that, we would love to hear them.
Let me get you a microphone.
Oh. Okay. Thank you.
We have one more question.
One more question. Oh. Okay. Keep them going.
All right. I have a question. I didn't hear it, though. Darla did touch on it, being walkability. But one of the things I was interested in is multi-generational housing, as well as ADUs, that there would be more permits for that, and intentional communities, as Darla had mentioned, walkability, but also, you know, more collective neighborhoods where all, you know, diverse nature of folks and abilities can access and have neighborhoods that don't need a whole lot of transportation. It is walkable.
Great comment and question. We are current, I think maybe Martha might have presented a little bit at your January meeting about the Housing Option Study and Action Plan. We are currently underway in implementing some of those strategies, and some are related to accessory dwelling units and working on trying to overcome any barriers there are in developing those. So we have some proposed code changes to kind of allow them to happen more, hopefully more easily. Even now, like, we're going to do proposals, so like the parking, lesser parking or no parking requirements for an ADU, or an additional, a second ADU on your property if you can do it attached. So we're working on trying to, at least for the county's unincorporated area, but Emily can talk to that, and the cities are also working on their own housing needs and studies, and trying to make more variety of housing within the city and then within the urban areas. I know on the planning side of things, like Jenna and I's work with the Commission on Aging, and even with the Housing Advisory Group, the interest in the importance of those livable communities and having areas, neighborhoods that you can walk to get the things that you need and you're not so reliant on cars. You know, historically how Clark County has developed has been very suburban in nature and very auto dependent. And so we are continuously working on ways to include more amenities within residential areas so that there is somewhere you can walk to. But it's going to be a kind of long-range change with the county's communities on that. But it is something that we have policies for and may become more risen and kind of important on how we change code or zoning with this periodic update to implement those. So I would encourage, as residents of the county, that if that's something that you're interested in, to let your decision makers, the elected officials know, right, as we do this periodic update on those types of policies and livability choices that you're interested in seeing in your communities.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So,
yeah.
Trish, give me a signal when there's no more questions, because I can't. My screen is crazy.
I don't see any more questions in the room or online.
I'm not seeing any either. Thank you so much for your time, ladies. Really appreciate it. And we'll be in touch.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. So our next agenda item, not nearly as deep. It's just looking at our advisory board meeting schedule. And so those of you that are new may recall that we have our public meetings, like our meeting today, in the odd numbered month. So March is a 3. So we have our public meetings, and then we do work sessions every other meeting. So that would be the even month. And they're all the first Wednesday of the month, same time. And we've been doing them hybrid, so you can join either way. The question always comes up every year about 2 meetings a year, and fortunately, one of them is in an even month and one is in an odd month. And so if we make a decision to cancel, it's not like we'd be a leg up on one meeting or the other. And so if we look at our April meeting, according to the calendar this year, our first Wednesday in April would be April 5th. And for anybody that has children or works in education in Clark County, may have plans that week. And so that would be a work session. And we do have the option of making a decision to cancel that meeting. And then the second one that sometimes gets a funny rub up against the holidays in July. And so the first Wednesday of July is actually July 5th. And so the 4th of July holiday will be on a Tuesday this year. And again, sometimes in the past we have decided with people vacationing during the summer, other priorities, that sometimes we end up canceling that public meeting for July. And so I'm going to open it up if anybody has any thoughts, ideas, burning desire to, since we do it remotely, chime in on what you think. And then Trish has an idea, too.
It is also an option to reschedule, too, just so you know.
What? Change? Yes, rescheduling is an option. And we have done that as well.
What is the quorum for meetings with the advisory board?
I think it's a simple majority.
Okay.
So that would be, well, actually, why don't I look that up while you all discuss this? Because we do have a little handy chart. I'll get it.
Okay, that is a really good question. And, you know, not every meeting has a decision or an action item that we need to decide on at that time. But, yeah. So that might not include us being able to be in a work session, that there's never any action items for work sessions. It's informational. Any other thoughts, board members, Amy, Bob, Abby, everybody's gone quiet, Sydney.
I'm not thrilled about the prospect of meeting during spring break just because I don't know where, you know, I'm going to be at that time.
Uh-huh.
We could be traveling. Again, my child drives now, so that's a different kind of issue for me. But the July meeting, I think we should try and do something about that.
Yeah.
Right near July 4th weekend, and I don't know that that's going to work.
That seems to be a week that people take, like, if they're going to take a vacation, they'll sometimes incorporate that holiday to get an extra. So we're currently at 9 board members, but we've got number 10 is in the wings. Yeah, so there you go. Trish is sharing that. So it'll be 6. So, yeah, simple majority. Any other thoughts? I concur, Lori, with definitely spring break. This year we'll just be down at my family cabin on the coast. And so I have internet and I have a computer, but if I don't have to zoom into a meeting at 5 o'clock on Wednesday for vacation, I'd be okay with that. And it's a work session. And then 4th of July, I also tend to agree that, most people are pretty wrapped up or bogged down or, yeah, bugged out, and so I would be in favor of either postponing or like rescheduling or just canceling altogether those meetings. And sometimes that decision can be made closer to that time. If there's something that comes up that we need to meet, you know, that's a whole nother thing.
I mean, of the two, I work in higher ed, so it's not my spring break. And so I could do the meeting in April for people who are, you know, do have school-age kids and that, you know, aren't going to be able to make a meeting. I could do the April meeting, but July, July, just, that's going to be hard to do.
Yeah. Okay, any other thoughts from Abby or Leanne or both of here? Yeah. Say, Nancy, I can see your head going up and down, but I'm not sure.
I just put in the chat, I mean, I'm good with whatever. I'm okay with those days. I'm also good if we need to change it because I'm hearing other folks, you know, really sound very important pieces for them as well. So, yes, so open to
that. Okay. Yeah.
that we attend to in meetings. And it was raised that if there's something really important that we can schedule a meeting, if there's something really important we need to address, but that hasn't happened. My child's spring break now is the college spring break, so it's not that first week of April. It's the last couple weeks of March, so I'm available in April, but I think for canceling definitely the July 5th one, and in previous years, we've just had a lot of folks on the board in education or who are parents of younger children, and those spring breaks made sense to cancel as well. They want to be sensitive to everyone's schedule.
Thank you, Leanne. Okay.
Jump in, Amy. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm not sure if you can see. I raised my hand. I tried. I'm available for both the April and the July meetings since I'm not going anywhere, but I agree that I want to go with whatever is comfortable for the rest of the board, and also if we did have something that came up, if we were suspending the meetings and then I would be available if we needed the meeting, or if we were wanting to reschedule those meetings a week later, I'd be glad to look at my calendar too. But I just wanted to throw in that I'm good for now and available for quorum if we were needed.
Thank you, Amy.
And I'll just add, if I can. We also can distribute documents to each other on those missing meetings. So there are ways for us to get information to each other if we do cancel two meetings. So I also can make them, but I am fully with the group saying we could easily work around them.
Tavi, I have a question about the hours. Does it normally start at 5:15 each time or later? Or my only concern is I get off at 5 o'clock when I'm at the office, and I rush here to be on time for 5:15. So I might be a few minutes late in future. So I'm wondering are we strict with 5:15 or can we move to 5:30? Either way, I'm fine, but just know I might be running a little late.
Yeah. So for the most part, we do meet at 5:15. We used to actually meet at 5, and because there was, it was when we were meeting in person downtown, and there was just some impact with people working until 5 and then trying to get to a meeting and not being able to get away early. So we moved our meeting time to 5:15. There is absolutely no penalty for joining the meeting late, whether it's in person or online. We don't have strict repercussions for late attendance. We appreciate everyone's participation. This is a volunteer board, and so your presence and your input is greatly appreciated. Does that answer your question?
Okay.
All right. So kind of what I'm hearing is that we would feel comfortable go ahead and proposing to cancel those two meetings, the April 5th work session and the July 5th public meeting, with the understanding that if there were a hot topic issue that came up, we would maybe look to reschedule them like a week later or at a different time during that month. Is that kind of what I'm hearing here?
I kind of heard people say they were available. So it's your all decision to do that. But, I heard a lot of I'm available. So are there people that can we maybe take them one at a time and then see how many people wouldn't be available and then go from there?
So we don't need to make any action necessarily tonight. Just keep that on track.
Well, no, yes. We would want the board to take action tonight to update the schedule, whichever way y'all wanted to go with that. But I heard a lot of I can make it. So I just didn't want to, cancel our time, especially with our new advisory board members. Again, I am just staff. You all are the board. You get to make the decisions.
Okay. A little bit of both going on. So, so if we want to make this an action item, somebody would need to make a motion to what we want to do going forward. And definitely it sounds like spring break will be an option for several folks. That is also a work session, and so there's no action items. It would be an informational meeting. An update from the county staff. And it sounds like July 4th is a little bit more, with the 5th being the day that we have a public meeting. And if we're going to cancel a public meeting, that would be the one we want to put out there now, so people could plan accordingly. So kind of maybe what I heard, but people are okay to go ahead and meet that first week in April, but let's go ahead and project that we're going to cancel the July 4th meeting. Okay.
I vote for that. This is Leanne. I'm fine with
that. Okay. So Leanne, was that an official motion?
And it looks like Lori has seconded in the chat.
Okay. All right. And so all those in favor say aye.
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 And all those opposed? Okay, so the motion has passed. We will go ahead and keep our work group for April on the schedule, and it will be hybrid, so if you're not physically present in Clark County, you can still join. And then we will cancel our July 5th public meeting, and if we need to revisit that at a later time, we can. Okay, my goodness. Okay, so we did, as you heard me mention earlier, we did have an opportunity to meet with our legislative staff, and Bob gets an award for meeting with just about everyone that he could. And so Bob, you get to kind of share your takeaways about the legislative meetings, and your not only did you do that, you also went to Olympia. So can you give us a little synopsis of how you, what your experience was like?
Absolutely. I actually have a PowerPoint that's being pulled up right now. And I just wanted to tell Kristen that I haven't eaten, so my voice may trail off. So please let me know if you cannot hear me any longer. It does happen, so. Well, my name is Bob Friedland. My pronouns are he, him. And I used to have the ability to boast that I was the newest member of the Developmental Disability Advisory Board of Clark County. But I do want to give a warm welcome to our new members, Amy, Tabby, Sydney, and I know that Gabriella left the meeting early. As you also heard from Susan, we actually had a legislative agenda that we limited to three important issues, even though there are many issues, but our 2023 legislative agenda included enhanced funding and opportunities for gainful employment, increasing the availability of affordable housing, and addressing the longer life expectancies of aging adults with IDD and their supporters that are facing expanding life needs with advancing age. And so these are the new and long-term legislators that are serving portions of or all of Clark County. It was a wonderful experience for me because I was meeting everyone for the very first time. We still have two that are still outstanding, but for the most part, I can say that every legislator that we met with was a good listener, a good supporter, and they are more than willing to have us return anytime in the future. You'll notice on the list that whenever we were on a call, we also tapped into Darla's expertise, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But I did want to zero in on something that came up very early during our conversations with legislators and also during our trip to Olympia. Two key legislative victories from the last year's session was a House bill that expanded access to concurrent employment and community inclusion services, and also the expansion of school-to-employment services through the Senate. And this suddenly made the DDA very worried about having enough personnel to be able to provide those services. So the Senate directed the DDA to complete a rate study for employment and community inclusion providers. And this was completed last year in October. And quite honestly, if it was fully funded, we believe it would have profoundly improved the recruitment and retention of these specialists. But over the last few months, we've learned that that current 2023 budget that was done by the rate study has not been fully funded to date. And it's currently 25 to 33% below that rate study recommendation. So here you can see that the rate study recommendations for these different hourly rates, what was recommended and then what is currently in the budget is vastly different, and that started to concern a lot of people. The problem that we ran into was that we discovered that unlike many other agencies, we have to actually put in for that rate study all of the indirect costs that have nothing to do with the salary. And as we've talked many times to legislators, it became very apparent that anyone that is providing services could end up earning less than the person that they're providing the services for. And so that just made the point a little bit stronger. And so we used the last 2 months to really bring up this underfunding issue. And so one of my exciting moments was to be able to go and climb the stairs of the Capitol and actually stand there as we actually probably had a majority of Clark County legislators speaking that day to the audience. And so it was a wonderful start to recognizing that in Olympia they are very strong and very supportive of issues related to the DDAB. So we weren't walking in with an agenda that wasn't going to get any traction. I'm just going to give you a couple of the highlights that I think are the most important as takeaways. I have five listed here. I promise I won't be holding you too much longer. I'm just as hungry. And we had a conversation about smokers and other things here in the room, so I'll make this short. But our first talk was with Linda Wilson, and this is where Darla just does her full imagination into the conversation. She describes this as a win-win situation where if you can help target those entry-level positions, you're freeing up funds for employers to fill much higher-level paying positions. So everyone is able to get in on that. And then on top of it, Trish pointed out how on its face, those rates seem high, but that the hourly rates also include the provider's indirect overhead costs. They have to provide specialist training. They have to provide insurance. They have to have support staff. And finally, Darla pointed out that the employment specialists were typically earning less than the people who they were training. This was very well heard by Linda Wilson, but it was also very well heard by all the other legislators that we talked to. However, it became very apparent that there are some legislators that were looking for what bills to support when what we're talking about is a budget issue. And so we had that in a number of our conversations with legislators. It's very interesting. Senator Ann Rivers talked about that DDA is definitely moving to shutting down Rainier School, and that was during the rally at the state capitol. That was a big, big issue. Representative Sharon Wiley mentioned that the forecasts for the budget in March were not looking good, and so that was kind of a downer talk with her. But in any case, Darla keeps sending these legislators these happy face handouts that are forwarded by the Washington State ARC, the ARC of Washington State. And so it really drives home the information about where these different bills are in the passage. And let's see, when we spoke with Greg Cheney, he's talking, most of his interest is on behavioral health, and it was really nice that as he was talking about accurate measures of services, such as bed utilization and length of stays, we're able to bring up this issue about individuals who are held in hospitals and taking up beds rather than having reasonable housing options. And so that overlap that Darla and Trish brought up really drove home the message about affordable housing to him. Now, right after this meeting, we had we stayed on the phone, and every so often they forget to cut us off, so we're able to have a conversation after the legislator leaves. But let me just finish up on this slide. Representative Kevin Waters talked about trying to establish a 1% set-aside for supported housing in the rent bill. And so, again, that was a nice conversation, and I hope that gives you a kind of a glimmer of what it was like to work with these legislators. But I have one final thought that I wanted to share with you, and that is that I come from the East Coast. I was in New York for many, many years, and then I moved to Maryland. And when I left Maryland, I have to tell you, I was active in the rate study press 4 years ago. When I left the city, everyone said, we've got this done. And then I get this message just last week, 2 weeks ago, that said that they're not canceling the meeting of the monthly seminar because they're going to have to sit down with this rate study advisory group in Maryland. So everything I thought that they had accomplished, they may be going back and reinventing the wheel. The New York disability advocates are now forming an important conversation for all of New York State. And if you can make out any of that writing, we can always send this PowerPoint to everyone. You can see that their issues are very similar to ours as well. And finally, I just want to point out that the ARC of the United States is actually going after Congress now. So it's on all of these points at the same issues over and over again. So let's just go to the final slide so I can stop talking. And that is that we did have this conversation after the meeting that we should be considering our group co-signing a letter informing legislators of the urgency to fully fund the DDA right study. And by that we mean that we are not going to write perhaps our own letter, but that we can be co-signing onto another agency or support group's letter to all the legislators. Thank you all.
Wow, thank you, Bob. What an awesome presentation. And you're kind of increasing the level of informal updates.
Bob is raising the bar, that's for sure. I would just like to say that if the board would like to consider taking action that Bob has discussed, that this is the meeting to do that. If the board would like to sign on to a letter, we do need to make sure that the county council is aware and kind of do some work internally with the county, but that this would be the meeting to do it, because session is, the clock is ticking on legislative session.
What do you all think? Would we like to write a group letter? Typically the way that, and I know a couple of people have left now, the way that that works is that I would work to draft a letter with some other folks, and then we would share that with the group and get consensus or editing or adding or deleting or anything, and then it would be sent on. Did I say that right, Trish? That's what I've done in the past.
Yes, I did send out to the advisory board a call to action that the Community Employment Alliance sent out, and they have some materials and information that the board could consider as, I mean, they have, you know, basically a drafted letter that the board could adopt and send, that kind of already has some information in it about what is needed, and or signing on to the letter and information with the Community Employment Alliance. So there's kind of some options.
Does anybody have an opinion about how you would like to proceed? The other option would be just to use the information that Trish forwarded and do a letter as an individual. And then they'd get more letters, but maybe not. It would be representing a more diverse or broad group. Neva?
I had a question. How much longer is left in the legislative session?
So let me pull that right here. It is, the last day of session is April the 23rd.
Oh, so we still have some time. We have about, you know, a good couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason I ask is if we draft something now or in the next week or two, and the leg still has time to consider it, but if, you know, the end of the session was next week, maybe this isn't the time. That was my thinking on it.
Yeah, budgets will be coming out shortly after the next, the next time they look to see what the funding options are going to look like going forward. Sorry, I can't remember the appropriate term. And so we're thinking about around April 12th, the budgets will start coming out. So if we want to do it, we're going to want to do it sooner versus later.
Thank you for that.
Any other thoughts, comments, ideas?
If we wrote a letter individually, is it something that we can sign with our affiliation with DDAB? Would that be an important component of our letter? And do we need to get approval from anyone within the community group that oversees us or make sure that we're within boundaries?
Sure, I think that if the advisory board wanted to take action to write a letter, we probably need to talk with the county council, county manager's office. Now, if you mentioned in your letter that you were also an advisory board member, you know, but not necessarily writing on behalf of the advisory board, then I think that would be fine, because you're many things. You know, you might say, I'm a teacher, I'm an educator, I'm an advisory board member, I sit on this board, whatever. So I don't think that would be an issue, but I would, you know, I will definitely find out. But certainly, I know that if the board wanted to do something, that we're going to have to do that. I'll have to do that piece of work, which is I'm happy to do.
Let me just ask one more question to Darla. What is your opinion about the strength of the way in which we put together a letter?
So oftentimes when we do a statewide campaign, what they'll do is legislative assistants will count the numbers coming in, and then they just report to the legislator on the number of times they were contacted about a certain thing. And so the number is what matters. So I suppose thinking about that, I mean, if they have one letter that's signed on to by a whole lot of people, it accomplishes the same type of thing. But also if they're receiving separate letters on the same issues, I think I don't know if I should have an opinion and just give you facts, sorry. Did that answer your question, Bob?
I guess the word I'd use is kind of.
Kind of, okay. Sorry.
Perhaps.
I think that having a letter from the board as a whole would be very valuable. But also, as individuals, sending letters could be valuable as well. And I don't think doing it in one capacity would necessarily prevent you from doing it in another capacity.
So, in other words, we should try and aim for a group letter if we can, send it out to everyone to give input and make editing suggestions, and then at the same time have Trish continue to work toward getting all of the necessary hurdles ahead of time, so that at some point in late March, we can get this thing out. And then we also will encourage everyone to write an individual letter. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Madam Chair, would you like to accept a motion?
So I heard a motion that on behalf of the DDAB, we being myself, Trish, and Bob?
Sure.
Would draft a letter that we will send to the board for review. Once we get editing and feedback, we will forward that letter on to the legislatures who have a connection to Clark County.
I second.
And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And the nays? Okay. Was that a no for me, Laura? I couldn't tell.
No, that was a yay.
Okay.
It took me a minute to find it. Sorry.
No worries. Okay. So the motion is passed. We will work to draft a letter. You are strongly encouraged to refer back to the email that Trish sent out on Monday, and Darla, I saw a chat. I'm sure you see that from Darla, that she didn't get this.
I did.
She would like you to forward it.
Yes,
I don't have your current email, Darla. Okay. I only have your current coalition email anymore. All right. Next on the agenda, legislative updates. Darla.
Okay. I just want to thank Bob for what an excellent job he did presenting. And yeah, well, you did raise the bar for all of us. So I'm going to make it quick because I know that it's late. We had our first, not the first cutoff, but the first big cutoff. So right now, bills are being heard on the floor. I have sent both smiley faces, those with the rest in peace fines on them for the bills that have died, as well as the shorter version. Now we've gone from 9 pages to, I think, 4 pages of bills that are still alive and going well. So a couple things I wanted to point out. House Bill 1506 is a bill that addresses the lease of DSH land. And this addresses the property on the Fircrest land. Now, for those of you that remember, Fircrest is the largest piece of undeveloped urban property in the nation, and the value of that land is incredibly high. We do not want 99-year leases to go forward, because what they have done in the past is leased land for like a dollar a year, and right now there's policies and legislation in place that says that any funds raised from the lease of those lands will go back into the DB community. So it's really important that we address House Bill 1506 and try to get it changed. And then I also wanted to mention House Bill 1628. That's the affordable housing bill that Representative Chocolate put out. That bill has died, but they think it's going to be necessary to implement the budget. And when something is necessary to implement the budget, they will bring it back in the budget section. So even though the bill is technically dead, we think it will be going forward. Today is the 52nd day of session of 105 session day. The next big cutoff is March 8th. And by March 8th, which is just next Wednesday, bills have to be out of the House of Origin and over to the next House. And then on April 12th is the opposite House cutoff date. And that's when we think we're going to really be starting to look at those budgets coming out. I'm not going to go through all the different bills. We've gone through them many times. Trish has those and she can get them out to you guys. As Bob so eloquently stated, the employment and day rate is a huge issue. And I do think putting a bill out for that is, or a letter out on that is highly important. That is something that we need to address in the budget. We are hearing that, you know, there's something like they have an extra, let's see if I can remember the numbers. They have an extra, I'm not going to be able to remember, but something like they have an extra $20 million, but they have like $80 million in requests, right? So there really is an issue in what gets funded and what doesn't at this point in time. It is always a great idea if something's highly important to you that you reach out and you contact your legislator, whether that's through an email or a phone call, or you go to Olympia. I'm happy to drive you up there and take you to your legislator's offices and talk to them about what's really important to you, because that really is what's going to make a difference in what gets funded and what doesn't. And if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them. If not, I want to be respectful of everyone's time.
Thank you, Darla. Do we have questions? Thank you, Trish, for sharing the information, too, on the screen.
And we have this posted to our website every meeting. After the meeting, we will send out an email saying, hey, this is all available, so and with a link to the website. So we'll have this. It's already there, but we'll send out that link tomorrow.
Okay. And so I know our meeting has run later than normal tonight, and so I hope any of our new members, we have not completely scared off, and there sounds like there might be malnutrition running rampant in the room.
Mine was at the beginning of the meeting. I was a little blurry at, but I got my blood sugar up, and I'm here with you. So, in the spirit of spontaneity, I understand Mr. Paul Gordon, CDAD board chair emeritus, is in the room. Is he still there, Chris?
Walt left already.
Oh, he did?
I think we should still do say what you were going to say, and we'll send him this link to this meeting.
Okay. And so it makes me sad that Walt was a member of the DDAB for, I guess, ever. He was a member when I joined, which was about 18 years ago, and he was a pretty well-established member at the time. Walt was the director manager of C-Band, so he was for C-Trans, was very instrumental in getting supported employees with C-Trans. And so last October at the Disability Employment Awareness Month, where we honor local employers, employees, businesses, and members of our community who have supported our individuals. One of the awards we give out every year is the Dennis Campbell Outstanding Service Award, and that is a award that recognizes an individual for the outstanding service to improve the lives of people with developmental and intellectual disabilities. And Walt was the recipient of this award this year. Because Walt has now retired, he was not at the ceremony in person or remotely, and so he didn't know he received the award. And tonight was our opportunity to formally acknowledge his award and share with him the words that were said on his behalf. And clearly, hunger set in, and he had to go. But I want to read what was written about Walt. So it says, Walt has a longstanding history in Clark County. He has been an instrumental, committed, and engaged member of the Clark County Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board since 1986. Over the years, he has served in the capacity of board member, vice chair, and board chair. His membership has been key in striving to meet Clark County Developmental Disabilities' mission of assisting all people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to achieve full, active, and productive lives. Through his position as the manager for C-Band, this person has been particularly resourceful in supporting mobility in the community and keeping stakeholders apprised of changes in growth in community transit options. Additionally, he encouraged C-Trans to hire its first supported employee. This was a very successful experience, which has continued to grow over time. Throughout his tenure on the board, he has been an integral part of discussions with legislatures to advocate regarding connections for people with IDD by promoting choice, partnerships, inclusion, and access for all. His commitment to building community for and around people with IDD has no equal. He has a global perspective that allows him to consider the opportunities and obstacles that might arise as a result of new mandates or system changes. His ability to think from a broad point of view has been valuable as it relates to supporting others. This person exemplifies the honor bestowed upon the Dennis Campbell Outstanding Service Award for his work in improving the lives of people with IDD. And so, Walt, we miss you. Thank you for your service. So, 1986, those of you that are still here that are new members of the board, just know that there's longevity with us. And so, hopefully, you'll still stay connected and stay with us and learn and grow with all of us. Any final thoughts?
I just want to thank Walt for all of his service. He's just been incredible and continues to be an incredible advocate for people with IDD. And what an amazing member of our community. Thank you.
Thanks, Carla. Okay.